I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton. Oh, forgot my name for a second. You can find me on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. I am the site manager here at Second City Hockey. It's been a few weeks. We took last week off for the holiday with some travel going on, but all of my line mates have reassembled. I can't talk tonight, so I don't know what's going on. It's going to be a ride, folks. Everyone strap in. But yes, all my usual line mates are back and with me this evening. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It is Shepherd Price.
Hi. As a UT alum, it's just my duty to say that with their wunderkind gone, Oklahoma is going to need to hire a boomer sooner.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there. Well, Brian Kelly's gone to LSU. Maybe you can get Luke Fickell out of Cincinnati before Notre Dame steals him. He's too young to be a boomer, though. So, how about Matt Nagy? How does that sound?
I would be perfectly comfortable with Matt Nagy going to the Oklahoma Sooners.
So would I. Yeah. I would quite enjoy that right now. That would be lovely.
As long as college football trades us John Harbaugh in return to the Detroit Lions, not John, Jim.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. He finally won the big one. He can move on from Michigan. Yeah. Being an actual head coach.
Yeah, exactly. Because all Michigan's doing is setting up to get slaughtered by Georgia in the final. Also with us this evening, he is the Second City Hockey. What Steve Savage is the stowaway, it is Mil Savage.
I am the exact opposite of what Steve Savage is the stowaway. I do everything that he doesn't do. That's why we have to combine. Yes, but thank you for the shout out. We are the modern day Tears for Fears. Savage Garden. Let's get it.
Modern day Tears for Fears. That's great. Everybody wants to rule the world, so.
If you listen to this and you play NHL, I got an Xbox and I'm at Millbox 20. So fight me in NHL.
That's well done. Are you also like Rob Thomas that every single song you've ever written, you are scared of something?
Yeah, but Rob Thomas is better at it, and I can't pull off the hoop earrings. Well, I do love Matchbox 20 though.
Matchbox 20 is great. That's I feel like that's universal. Everybody at least likes at least one song by them for the most part.
Or they at least know it.
Or they at least know it, yeah. Everyone, you hear 3 a.m. come on the radio. You know that jam. Mill, by the way, is on Twitter at Mill182. And the last line mate of the evening is not on Twitter, but you can find all her stuff at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. It is Betsy.
I was just sitting here trying to think if I knew a Matchbox 20 song.
You're not that young. What? You have to know.
I guarantee you know 3 a.m.
I'm sure I do, but like you know how you know songs, you hear them and you're like, oh, not only do I know this, but I know all the words.
Well,
I couldn't name a Matchbox 20 song.
Well, if you don't know
I'm that young
20 song, then you probably know the song that Rob Thomas did with Carlos Santana because it is smooth and it is delightful.
Smooth.
I know who Rob Thomas is, if that helps.
Well, okay.
Kind of.
That's a good start.
Real, their best song is called Real World. I recommend it.
I don't know. 3 a.m. 3 a.m. is hard to beat.
I know of Matchbox 20. I don't think I've ever heard of Matchbox
20. I think, all right, I think this is starting to be more of a generational thing than really.
I'm the same age as Mill. Smooth. Okay. I definitely know Smooth by Santana.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's the singer of Matchbox 20.
Yeah, I like I said.
So you heard them if Santana was in their band, basically. It's a great song.
But yeah, I don't know if I could. Like, I'm sure if I heard a song. I'm going to go listen to some songs after this, I promise. And I'll see if I
can. Just start with 3 a.m. and work yourself down the Spotify list. I'm sure. I feel like 3 a.m. should be their number one song on Spotify, if it's not.
Either that or Push.
Yeah. I'm going to go 3 a.m. But real quick, before we dive into the hockey talk, I just want to quickly circle back with everyone. Since we are the internet's best hockey-themed food podcast, I just made that title up for us. It was confirmed in the Nielsen ratings. We're just going to roll with it. How was everyone's Thanksgiving dinner? Did you eat a wildly inappropriate amount of food?
Yes. But to be fair, I didn't eat the day before, so I preserved it.
There you go. That's a veteran move right there. Mill, what about yours?
I got really drunk.
Also acceptable. Betsy?
Actually did not eat a whole lot because there were way too many, way more family members there than there should have been. And one of our sides was weird and different was a broccoli dish.
Like
we had broccoli too.
Was it like a broccoli casserole type of thing or?
It was called Tuscan broccoli. It looked like broccoli crazy. With some type of cheese. No, it was good. It just, I'm not sure we needed those and green beans. I thought green beans were like, green bean casserole was like
yes.
The designated casserole. Green vegetable of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like, why? We had both of them because Honey Baked gave us one of them for free. We got our Thanksgiving for Honey Baked ham. So,
which okay. Broccoli.
Recommend
broccoli on the Thanksgiving table makes me uncomfortable and I don't know why.
That's why I was like, this is weird. It's one of their normal like side dishes, but I wasn't planning. That was weird that we got it for that, but they were like, you get an extra side. My mom just was like, yeah, sure. Interesting.
We've got another holiday related food topic that we're going to dive into at the end of this podcast, but I guess we should talk about some Blackhawks hockey because it has been 2 weeks since we were all gathered on these airways to discuss this team and their, it's such a weird ass season. Like, I can't believe it's only been 21 games. So we're effectively at the quarter pole of the season. I feel like it's been going on for at least 3 years at this rate. But since we last talked to you, which I believe was, what was that, like November 16th, 2 weeks ago, something like that, the Hawks have managed to win, or excuse me, they've won 3-6. One of them was in overtime, so 3-3. I feel like I said at the end of the last show that if for the Hawks to keep things interesting, 8 of 12 would probably be the bar, and they got 6 of 12. So things aren't great. And I think that the two, the hope was that they would steal a point or two in the games against Edmonton, Calgary, and St. Louis. And they stole both against St. Louis, but then promptly shit the bed against San Jose on Sunday night. So here the Hawks sit 7-12-2, not in a playoff spot, not really close to one either. And the proverbial, bar of teams that are not in at Thanksgiving that usually don't end up making the playoffs at the end. The Hawks are in that club of not making the playoffs. They're 7 points out. It's not great. So what we wanted to do this evening is kind of do focus on one side of the team in particular that has been scuffling of late, and it's gotten to the point to where it's pretty much gotten all the attention at practice and all the beat reporters and all the comments, and that is the offense, because the Hawks have only scored in the last five games. They have scored 8 goals. That is an average of 1.6 goals per game, if math serves me correctly, and that's not great, Bob. So what we're going to do, it is a very simple question. I'm going to make each one of you guys the head coach one at a time. We're going to start with Shea, and we're going to ask you, how do you fix this offense?
Are we doing that right now?
Right now. How are you going to fix this
offense? I would either waive or trade Mike
We're already kicking people
Hardman.
Off.
Get rid of Hardman. Get rid of Reese Johnson.
Took my answer. Go ahead,
get rid of him. I don't want him. I don't want him around the team. I don't want him on the fourth line. Get him out. Get him off my team. one of the most common fourth liners can actually play hockey, and that's Ryan Carpenter. And it's inexcusable that Philip Kurashev was just sent to the Rockford. So you pull him back up. You fired Derek King. Well, I'm head coach, so Derek King's gone. I would try and fire my boss, which is Kyle Davidson, and find an actual GM. I do not like current management at all. Philip Kurashev comes back. Lucas Reichel, whenever he's done with concussion protocol, he's coming up. He's too good to leave down there. What does Erik Gustafsson provide? Because he's supposed to be providing some offense. I don't see it.
He provides laughs.
I feel like that question
I replaced him with
can't. So
yes. I'm waiting. We're waiting for Kalinick, but till that time, I call Ian Mitchell up. Come play hockey. It's time. And then, put Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat together again. Maybe Borgstrom, maybe Kane. And then Doc and Taves are going to play together with Kubalik. Kubalik needs to get back to goal scoring, and I think giving him two playmakers should do that. And then it teaches Doc how to play with a center who needs help, because Taves doesn't have a goal this season. So giving him another playmaker and Doc should hopefully help that.
Well, and I'll put a pin in what you're saying, because the lines of practice on Tuesday, also known as earlier today, the top line was Taves, Kane, and Hagel. And then second line is DeBrincat, Doc, and Strome. So That sounds like it's not far away from what you were saying.
No,
the top six.
Right. I just put Kubalik where Hagel is, because I think Kubalik needs to score more goals than Hagel does. And a good team and a good Blackhawks team, the Kubalik's getting 30 to 35 goals. And I think probably playing with Kane and Taves helps them do that. And then the power play is just atrocious. I would tell them to actually shoot the puck, judging on their performance against San Jose. Put Kubalik back on power play one, because the power play ran through him last year when they were good. He is an effective power play player and should have the puck on the power play and be shooting. And him and DeBrincat should be like the two opposite wings.
So it sounds like the general theme of what you're saying is just better utilization of the talent that the Blackhawks have. Would that be a
yes.
fair? Okay. So now I'm
yes. Although I would also have never traded for Seth Jones and have, gotten Dougie Hamilton, who went crazy on Hockey Fights Cancer Night. Who just went insane.
You've got a decade of Seth Jones. Just get used to it. Just telling you. I want to take that theme of general, just better utilization of the talent the Blackhawks have, and turn to Betsy, because yes, Shea took your Reese Johnson answer, but you've been adamant about this whole thing. And I've seen you mention a lot related to quality of competition and how that is affecting everything. So I would like to, we're going to clear the floor. The space is yours. Just go ahead. And I'm going to sit here and pop some popcorn while you talk.
Okay. So I don't want to make a big deal out of quality of competition, like it's the end of the world or anything like that. But part of the reason that teams have, and successful teams have, checking lines is to occasionally free up the other, like the top lines, to face lower competition. It works extremely well. It's just really an effective way to roll things. the Blackhawks do not have a checking line, and to pretend that, like, say, what Reese Johnson, Hardman, and Carpenter were, like, say, in San Jose, is a checking line just because they are quote-unquote checking players is a lie, okay? It's a fucking lie. They faced the lowest quality of competition the entire game, pretty much. So they're not helping anybody by taking low comp. Being able to deploy one through, like, to line up your lines 1 through 4 on purpose is dumb. I don't know how to say it any differently. Your top players are always going to get the highest quality of competition. That's just the way it is. They play way more than everybody else, so they're going to see the other players that see it. But there is a reason that Marcus Krueger to Patrick Kane was the most common line change during the successful years of Chicago. There's a reason that Boland was so effective at flipping the ice and then helping get other players on the ice during, like, the 2010 year. It works really well. And right now they don't have that, and it's not going to help at all. I'm not saying that's going to save anything, but you should at least try it. And I was excited when King first got here, because he said something about matchups, and he even said, you know, trying to get Carpenter out there against, you know, help with the checking role. And then a couple of games in, that just went to shit, because they put ineffective players with people like Carpenter, and it didn't work. So they couldn't play them against high comp. So that's the reason you get rid of people like Reese Johnson and Mike Hardman, is because they don't contribute offensively in a traditional sense, and they can't help with the checking role, because people, what they don't understand on that line is you can't just check well. You also have to flip the ice. It has to be meaningful checking. So if you're just hitting someone, but the puck is not going back to a Blackhawks player or getting out of the zone, it's not actually good.
It's just hitting for the sake of hitting.
Yeah.
Hitting for a purpose, hitting to separate opposing player from the puck, so you get the puck back.
And I'll even say that the two goals that the fourth line have scored in the last couple of the games before the last one, that's what you mean by effective checking. Reese Johnson and Carpenter played along the boards, and that's the reason that worked. Or Hardman and Reese kind of spooked the goalie into flipping it up, you know, and they were gimme goals because the goalie was, like, way too far out of the net. Like, it was crazy. But, you know, that's effective. That's like one out of every 10 times either one of those guys go in the corner. Otherwise, it doesn't turn the puck over enough. And it's frustrating to watch, because they both have possible skill sets to be useful players, but putting them in the lineup right now when they're like half baked isn't good for them. They should both be in the AHL honing that to work well so that it can be useful at a higher level. And so I think it's a disservice to them and a disservice to the Blackhawks.
And from watching the AHL, like, if you need a league where you're going to teach guys how to forecheck after the puck is dumped in, put them in the AHL, because all they fucking do is dump the puck into that league. Oh, my God. I watched a good chunk of the Ice Hogs and Wolves game Saturday night because it was on TV locally and I wanted to watch Lucas Reichel. This was before he got hurt, so don't blame me for that. But it just, like, unfathomably, just kind of boring, because they dump the puck so goddamn much. Get to the blue line, dump it in. Get to the blue line, dump it in. It's like, somebody skate the goddamn puck into the zone one time. And yeah. I think Reichel did a few times. And Alex Nylander did too, actually. I thought.
Do you know who does really well from the blue line? Regula. How do you say his name?
I thought it was going to be somebody weird, but Alec.
No. He actually, he had such good little rushes when I was watching him in these games. And I was like, damn, he can skate for a really big guy. He's not fast or anything, but he's got moves. Anyway, I'm going to stop admiring some of the defenders.
Real quick before I bring Mill in, after we've probably taken all the good talking points.
Points, Dave.
Okay, good. If you were going to build a checking line out of the Hawks, like, roster right now, who would be on your checking line?
Kyra, Carpenter, Hagel.
Say those again, Shay.
Kyra. Yeah. Kyra.
I think it's Kyra.
Kyra?
I don't know.
Carpenter, Hagel.
Not bad. I wouldn't mind flipping an Entwistle in there.
Who has been out with an injury, so.
Yeah, and once he's ready. Yeah, that sounds good. I actually didn't mind Kershev down there either, because Kershev is more skilled than fourth line, but he also knows how to grind and, again, has effective checking. So it's not that big. I mean, Teravainen played on the fourth line a little under Q because he could do that, you know, even though he was smaller and people gave him crap about his supposed, you know, weakness. Like, they were all like, he's soft. He was really effective on that role because he knew he had good positioning and mostly used his stick very well. Kershev has a really smart stick and he's got good body positioning. He's just not scoring, which, you know, sucks. He can go down to the AHL, maybe get a little bit of confidence and hope something happens. But yeah, I agree with Shea. I like his line, but if you wanted Hagel to stay in the top nine, I think Entwistle could do it. They need to figure out if Entwistle can do it is the other thing.
Well, and the thing, like you mentioned about like Teuvo once playing on the fourth line, that I thought that was the kind of the point of the fourth line is like, or one of potential point is using the fourth line to bring up your young guys to expose them to the NHL without like throwing them in, hey, play 20 minutes a night. No, we're going to give you like 10 to 12 on the fourth line, get your feet wet, and then we'll bump you up as you figure out how the league works.
I mean, that's what the fourth line should be in 2021 when you want to roll four lines.
Yeah, it also depends.
In Colorado last year.
It depends on what the role of the fourth line is and what the player is. If it's a finesse player and they just aren't suited for that role, put them on the third line and just play them less minutes on a offensively skewed third line. And Patrick Kane or DeBrincat or somebody can pick up the extra minutes on that line. It's 100% what they did when they elevated Teravainen played on both those bottom six lines a couple of times when he had lower minutes, and it worked out great for him. And they would just flip in Kane to take his minutes when he wasn't, you know, like, it's not that big a deal. Like, I would be fine with that for, like, Strome, since they're having some issues with him. He could play on the third line, and you flip Kane into him for him if that's what you wanted. Or Kershev, put him back on the third line, but have him rotate with DeBrincat or something. And it works really well, too, because then it means Kane or DeBrincat are facing lower comp with another line, and it gets them against, like I said, against, like, the schlubs, the bums, and they might be able to knock in some points. Patrick Kane scored a ton of points when he double shifted with Shaw in 2013. I think he scored more with Shaw than he did with any of his other two primary line mates that year.
All right, Mill.
Anyway, sorry.
Mill, you've been awfully quiet, so let's you have the floor here. Go right. You said you got points, so have at it.
Well, I agree with everything you guys just went through, but to me, I honestly don't give a crap who's on the ice until they start playing the way they need to play, because their neutral zone play is a big steaming pile of shit. And if they don't fix that, it doesn't matter. Here's the thing, and you guys talked about some of these things. I know Betsy's always said it. They need to be better about breaking up zone entries or just break them up at all. And also the point about, like, hitting to knock your opponent off the puck. That starts at your blue line, and then you have to have a structured neutral zone formula. You know, when the Hawks were good, obviously they had so many different great lines. Saad was like the ideal first forward into the zone. Your late man has to know where he's got to be. They don't have any flow to their game. Their transition game looks just kind of wherever everybody is. And if they can fix that and crash the net, you're going to get garbage goals. You're going to get opportunities. High danger chances are not always pretty, but that's how you score goals. And if they don't start fixing that kind of stuff, to me, it does. Like, I don't think the matchups and all that's going to matter.
So that is because, like, I feel like they've been harping on this on the broadcast, and I feel like it's come up a lot in press conferences with Kane. Excuse me, where he's talked specifically about the neutral zone and setting up. It looks like they're running the 1-2-2 with one forward up high and then the two other forwards and the two D-men behind him. And it looks, I feel like it's better than it was under Colleton. Is that fair to say?
Well, the thing is, it is, but to me, it's not like, it looks meh. It's not aggressive. Like, they don't have any, they got to make the first move. You know what I mean?
Conway.
Well, yeah, no, but that's a good reference, but that's kind of the truth. Like,
okay,
you have to be aggressive at your own blue line and then turn it on going the other way. And everybody has to know where they're going to be. And the Hawks are kind of playing conservative, like peewee hockey, like let's drop back. And yeah, I'm happy that they're keeping, you know, trying to keep pucks out of the slot. But like, for fuck's sakes, you got to go score and you're in the NHL. Like, you should know how to play. This isn't, you know, 8 year olds.
It's so like, it sounds like what you're saying, Mill, if I can summarize this briefly, is that they've made their game too stupid and too simple
to score. Yeah. I mean, they're not giving up tons of goals every night, but it's like that also, I mean, they have a good goalie, but like, I mean, you know, you guys are seeing it too. Like, I mean, the numbers aren't good either, but like, you can just watch it and they just don't, like, you don't think they're going to go down and score every time they get the puck back.
It's certainly been a more boring style of hockey since Derek King has taken over, for sure. There has been significantly less action for the Hawks on offense, for their opponents. Like, I feel like there has not been a glutton of players wide open right in front of the net like there had been during the Colleton era. So that's nice, but it almost sounds like they have overcorrected on the defense. Like they got so worried about defense that they crippled everything else.
Yes. Can I also point out real quick that this is like deja vu because the same thing happened with Colleton when his second year. Everybody was like, oh, yay, they're better defensively. And they were marginally, like they are now, marginally. But the problem was nobody could fucking score. So this all feels very deja vu, including player usage to me. And maybe that's just how AHL coaches are and they should get a real one.
Well, that's kind of the thing. That's like the point I was trying to make. It's like, this isn't the A. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And you have, like, we could bitch about Reese Johnson all week and that's fine. But like, the majority of the guys on their roster are NHL caliber players at least.
Yeah.
They know how to skate. Some of them not particularly well, but they can skate. They know how to hold their stick. Like this, like, again, this isn't the AHL where half of your roster is tomato cans and the other half are guys who are going to be up in the league in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to do, you popped in NHL 21 and you're playing the tutorial when you could just put it on All-Star or whatever the level is above that and you'll be fine. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I mean.
Because so this leads into the next topic I wanted to dive into. It's related to like the on-ice philosophy of Derek King and it looks like the people above him, which mainly is Kyle Davidson, the interim GM. And my initial thought was going to be, I had a thought about playing some, or thinking I was going to be playing a devil's advocate to what the rest of you were going to say. And we're going to see where it goes because through this conversation, I don't know. I tell you what, we're going to take a quick time out. We're going to gather thoughts and we're going to come back and talk all about that on the other side of this break.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as promised before the break, wanted to dive into a little bit more of a philosophical debate with the Blackhawks in terms of what they're trying to accomplish since Derek King took over. And this is kind of related to what we were approaching on the end of the last segment that Mill brought up with how they're playing like an AHL style game. And I think I said something like they may have overcorrected. Because my thought is, if you watched the first 12 games of the Hawks this season, like I think the goaltending was bad, but I think the biggest issue with the team, and maybe the last 2 or 3 years of the Colleton era, was the defensive coverage was just atrocious, and so they were like I feel like Derek King, whenever he got promoted to head coach, was either from watching the Hawks from afar or the game film that he studied after he became the head coach. He just watched this team, watched the highlights and just decided, I don't know what else I got to do, but number one, I got to fix this fucking defense because it is goddamn terrible. and he's just started there and is going to work his way forward. And I don't know if I necessarily, I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea to do that. Perhaps they have overcorrected, as I've mentioned before, but I don't know who, if anybody has thoughts of that or responses to that, but just my initial thought is like, if the head coach came in and decided, I got to fix defense first and we'll worry about everything else later. I don't know how bad of an idea that is. So somebody tell me while I'm wrong.
Well, as a Steelers fan, I can tell you, but that's a different sport, but it's the same idea.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, like when you defense wins championships, and if you have the best offense, you are going to score a lot. But if you have no defense, you're screwed. However, if you have like an amazing defense, but you can't score, you're also not going to win games. So you have to delegate some balance. You have to figure out where your strengths and weaknesses are. You know, so the Hawks, they need more scoring. Clearly, it's pretty apparent, right?
Well, I feel like now they have recognized the problem that they are not scoring, and now they're trying to do that. Betsy, I heard you speak up. So
here lies the Hawks. They never scored.
Go ahead, Betsy.
I was just going to say, like, how much have they actually improved defensively that is as a part of a coach's strategy? Because so obviously we all notice that they have better puck management and they're not chasing guys behind the net. They're not leaving guys open in the slot, which is all very nice and everything. But those are like basics. If you just told hockey players to go out and do, most of them would do naturally. So I'm not sure I'm willing to give that much credit to the coaching staff, especially since Derek King very much said, I just told them to go out there and play, you know, go out there and do your stuff. And
he's
the team
playing rat hockey.
The team immediately started to improve. And then he said that they were focusing on the slot, which is great, except there's still a ton of shots coming from scoring chances. You know, they've moved up from being like dead last in expected goals and high danger against per 60, but they're into like middle of the pack, which is good. That's good improvement. But it's also the smallest sample, so it also means that you can skew it a lot easier. But their scoring chances, which is anything in the house, and even their low danger chances are the same. Or technically, I think the scoring chances against are about a little bit higher. So yeah, they're keeping them out of their slot, but they're not possessing the puck that much, except for in the Sharks game.
And the Blues game.
They did good jobs there. But again, both those teams got a lead and then sat back and kind of let the Hawks shoot from afar. And the reason they won the Blues game is because Fleury kept them in it until the point that they needed it. And then Hagel's shot got tipped. And it's the only thing they could get through. And they couldn't get through on the Sharks because the Sharks just kept them to the outside. So if a team knows that you can't score, that's what they do. They're just going to be like, sure, shoot really from afar, but you're not going to score anyway.
Yeah, this is the same thing as basketball coaches saying, just let them shoot threes. We don't care.
Unless that team has Steph Curry, then they're fucked.
Well, not in the NBA.
I know.
You can't touch a guy, not a guard him. But like you go to high school games a lot, Dave. I'm sure you see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it is a sound defensive strategy that if you have a team like the Hawks that are scuffling, like just, you know, protect the house, keep everybody in tight, keep them, you know, outside the dots and up near the blue line. And you're not going to score a lot of goals from there. You know, like, you know, guys like the guys that are the goal scorers on the Hawks, the Canes, DeBrinkets, the Kubaliks, like they're not going to score from the point. Like they're going to get, you know, open things up in the middle. Shay, I heard you speak up a little bit if you wanted to offer some responses.
Yeah, they haven't improved that much in terms of defense. They are still allowing the same chances. Like, the improvement is not there, and they've just moved from bad to boring, and I'm not willing to make that trade.
Because,
like, the looking at the four quadrants that have sort of become famous, that, like, the good, fun, bad, exciting, bad, boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're both, there's three.
They're not even evil. At least be evil bad.
No, like they are. It's I am of the firm opinion that Derek King is an AHL coach who is coaching at an NHL level, and that does not work.
Well, that's two in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the good news I have for you is that he still has the interim tag. So there's that.
I don't like that they've already announced that he's going to have that tag for the season. What, like, you're not like, if you find the right guy tomorrow, you're really not going to hire him?
Yeah. Well,
they might be waiting for somebody to get canned.
Yeah, I think I don't mind them waiting. If somebody walked up to them and was a great coach, sure. But I would like them to look at people that are currently employed. There are some, like, I don't mind them picking from like Sweden and stuff like that if they want to. But my whole thing about defense is that the best defense is having the puck.
And the Blackhawks don't do that.
And they've done it in two games, but once they had the puck, they didn't know what to do with it is the problem. So like you have to teach them what to do with that if you're going to actually have it and it be meaningful. Because when they don't have the puck, they're a little bit better. They're more structured at least, but it's not helping their goalie that much. Cause Fleury's not seeing quite as many high danger chances doesn't mean he's still not seeing a lot of chances. I kept saying this in the comments, but if Fleury put up league average numbers in the games that he played, those first five he played, he would have lost 4 out of 5 of them. If the Blackhawks had lost 4 of those 5 games, would anybody be even saying yay Derek King at all?
Right.
No, it's because
the goaltender is the biggest statistical difference in this team in the Colleton era this season and the King era this season is the goalie save percentage.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That's the biggest number that has changed. So I guess this is me. I'm trying to find something to be optimistic about because I don't have much. Like deep inside, I have this creeping sense of dread that this team is fucked this season and for the next decade. So I don't want to go farther down that road. We can do that show in March if we need to. But so I'm trying to find the optimism here. And the optimism I've landed on is that maybe just for 8 games, you get Fleury bails your ass out, you know, all those games in November, maybe December, something finally clicks from a coaching perspective or something on ice. I don't know. Like maybe, I don't know. That's the only optimism I can reach for now is that something that the new coaching staff is trying to implement clicks in the next few weeks. And this team goes off on a real bender of 8 to 12. Bender would be like what they did the first few weeks, the opposite of a bender, like winning like 8 of 10 or something like that. Cause that's what it's going to take to get them back into the playoff chase.
You do know this is a Blackhawks podcast, right, Dave?
Well, yeah.
Optimism means being thankful that Stan Bowman lottery protected the pick.
Jesus.
You know, here's the thing with the Hawks though. It's like, as bad as they are in not great position, the West kind of sucks.
Yeah, I would.
Like Nashville's coming back down to earth. You know, it's like
a whole lot of mediocre teams. Like, I mean,
it's like they're all crap.
I'm sorry. The Minnesota Wild are the top of the Central. And I just, I know. The
Minnesota
Wild
are okay.
They're legit, actually. You know what?
I will believe it when I see it. And I just, you can't convince me. Like, this is like 15 years of watching this team, everybody telling me, oh, this is the year the Wild are going to be good. And then they aren't. So
I would love if the Hawks were playing like the Wild are right now. They're playing exciting and they have the puck a lot and a large share of their expected goals. So yeah, I would
just tell you,
I
cannot wrap my head around the Minnesota Wild being a good hockey team. Is part of it
that like Ryan Hartman has as many goals this season as Alex DeBrincat does.
But let's not go down that road. I didn't realize he was up to like 12 goals.
Yeah, but if he was a Hawk now, he'd be shitty too. Yeah. Who cares?
I'm not. Maybe. Like, and he got traded. He got traded from Chicago. Got traded again, and then he's like on his second or third team via free agency. So it's not like the Hawks missed the boat on him. He just something is clicked in Minnesota, and good for him. But
I think he stinks.
I've always been a Ryan Hartman fan, so you guys, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying you shouldn't like him. I just mean he smells.
Oh.
No, I saw him.
Hair looks amazing, so I don't think that's true.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure when I went to that 10-1 game, I think he had 5 points in that game.
He did. He schmaltz and Kane lit up.
I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, those were good days. Those were good days. Right now, it'd take the Hawks a month to get 10 goals.
I wish the comment section still existed because, like, I was, like, really annoyed about the Ryan Hartman trade back then because everybody was like, it's for a first. And I was like, it's for a late first. Do you guys not understand? I like Boudin, but it was kicking the can down the road. And has he impacted the team yet? No. Well, he's still young, but it's been years.
Well, I mean, the list of guys who have impacted the team is pretty short to start.
Because that's because he's trading them before. They never developed. Like, that's a whole nother topic.
They're literally all gone.
I feel like we've done that episode.
We have, and it just read the
Ryan. It keeps happening.
I know. Yeah,
it brings it back around.
We have to do a version 32 electric boogaloo for that.
Bowman's trading first-round picks and reclamation projects is equivalent to watching TV land.
I laugh because it hurts. I mean, the only good news is that, like, there's an entirely different regime, and even, like, Kyle Davidson has the interim tag. So that's the only weird part, like, with the head coaching thing is like if you want to hold off on the head coach, fine, but I feel like you need to hire your hockey person.
Are we sure that Davidson's a real person?
No, yeah, I saw him on TV in a few interviews. Oh, I haven't seen him, like, in person yet.
But what if he's just an actor?
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. What if he's just an actor and Danny Wirtz is one of the
kids? Doesn't he look a little TV? He looks a little Hollywood, you know?
I guess we'll have to do some investigative reporting for Second City Hockey, first time ever.
He's only, like 3 or 4 years older than some of, like...
That's why I don't think he has a job in hockey, because it's usually you have to be, like, 70.
Or a good last name.
Or yeah, like a garbage son. Mm-hmm. Bowman
or a former hockey player.
Bowman didn't play.
A former hockey player is the best GM in the league.
Bowman didn't play, but he's a garbage son.
yes, he is.
He didn't bite anybody though.
I got nothing for that. So I'm gonna make an awkward subject change and really quickly just say, at what point do we fairly assess Derek King's error? Like 20 game mark, right? So basically we're going to give Derek King the month of December to figure shit out. And then I guess if the only thing that's saving the Hawks is a 960 save percentage from their goalies, then we can start the fire Derek King chance at Bulls games and Bears games. And
don't ruin the Bulls for me. Illini
basketball games for some reason.
No.
Wrestling shows.
Like, what? Shows. Look. I don't.
That was ridiculous.
The fact that people are chanting "Fire Nagy" outside of Soldier Field is really dumb to me. I if you want to do it, I guess fine. You can do it. I'm gonna sit here and tell you you're stupid for doing it. It's a dumb thing. Stop doing it. Again, thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
He's just Matt Nagy is just a less famous Mark Trestman.
You're by the way, you're welcome for not firing him this week, for not beating you. You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, by the way, I'm just saying, Matt Eggs had more playoff appearances than the Blackhawks coach who just got fired. Well, okay, they're even, but, yeah, whatever.
They're even because he made the playoffs and won a game against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, well,
he did it.
Corey Crawford won a game against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, I mean, he beat them, like, by himself.
Yeah.
Corey Crawford be the head coach? Why not?
No.
Goalie coach. Although, why would you fire Jimmy Wade?
That's the one good coach that we know they have. I don't know about
Corey Crawford should probably get along with me. We seem to both like drinking and going to shows.
We can go see Rise Against. Absolutely. All right,
they're good live.
So let's see. We've got a lot of games coming up. The month of December. We're gonna find out all about this team. All these things that these hypotheticals where we talk about. Well, we just need to see more games. They got a lot coming up. I mean, the next 3 weeks, the first 18 days of November, they have 10 games. So they play pretty
December.
Much. Yeah, December. Did I say September?
Yeah.
You said I can't talk. I don't know what happened to me.
Ovechkin might have five on if you're listening to this Wednesday tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they're on the road. They play the Capitals Thursday, the Rangers Saturday, the Islanders Sunday, and then they come back home and play the Rangers next Tuesday, and we'll see how it goes.
So, Derek King, 21 games would be Christmas Eve. So, essentially before Christmas is when, like, by Christmas. Oh,
we'll have all right. Game. So if we need to start the fire Derek King campaign, we can do it on Christmas Eve.
If he still has the interim tag, he's probably going the whole year and then just.
Oh, he is, but we'll complain about him.
He's got the whole year.
But he's not going to get hired like after that.
Well,
never know.
Stranger things have happened. Jeremy Johnson got a 2-year extension after.
Okay, but Stan Bowman's gone, and I think that they know enough now.
Kyle Davidson.
I do not trust the Stan Bowman groomed heir. I do not trust it.
That's true. Like, you want to give Davidson a clean slate initially, but I he has done some things that are not encouraging.
He could take away
waving for Kurashev. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I don't think that they're going to let him lose. Like, if they have that type of coach again, because nobody wants to go see the team anymore. They're not buying tickets.
Yeah. Actually, didn't they say ticket sales were back up a little bit?
They usually get a good boost in December, like just
for Christmas presents. Yeah. But
people come home for the holidays, want to go see a game. Yeah,
but I'm going to see them in Nashville.
But the Hawks, the thing with them is they don't care until it hits them in the pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see in January and February if they're still scuffling at the bottom of the division. We'll see how many people want to go to
games. Plus, with the COVID spikes, is going to affect that too.
Well, that's a whole other issue. Yeah. That's a whole other thing. Like, you've already had two teams had to postpone games this season, and like the NHL sent out a memo on Tuesday. Just they like canceled Christmas parties across the league. They said no more autograph sessions. So
if they make if they don't get to go to the Olympics because people are stupid, I'm going to be mad. Well, I want to see the best on best.
Well, the Bulls games are even suffering in attendance because of the spikes, because they should be selling out right now.
Yeah, that's the actual good team in town.
I mean, they're fun.
Don't they have the same record as my Milwaukee Bucks?
I don't know, but they have Lonzo Ball, and he has me making Yeezy Boost moves in my Reeboks or whatever that rap line is.
I don't know what that means, but sounds like you're having a good time, so enjoy it.
It's fucking sick.
All right, and really quick, I do want to say one thing on the positive side of things. I am intrigued by Josiah Slavin, who was called up today. It sucks that Kershev's the one that went down, but I'm intrigued to see what Josiah Slavin does.
Only would happen to us.
Yeah, Betsy, what'd you say?
I was going to say I'm really excited for him, too, because I liked him in college, but when he said today – the funniest, like he was like, one, I'm not a pretty skater. And that's very true. He's effective, but not a pretty skater. And then his brother called him, was like, he's a big boy like me. And I just want to say that hockey players calling themselves big boys is a choice that I find amusing.
Okay.
I want to say that about Steve.
I had to get a quick note in, just speaking of waving people, RIP Gaudette gang.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Sorry. Yeah,
the funeral is Thursday.
Yeah. We're going to do an Irish goodbye, Brian Kelly style. So
Dave and I are going to go out on probably more Adam Street, because Madison's too conspicuous, and we're going to pour out a shot like on the ground.
We need a booze that starts with G for the Gaudette gang.
Goldschlager.
There we go. There it is. Goldschlager.
I was thinking we'll just show up with like a couple of 40s.
Okay.
I mean, we want to fit the West Side like narrative, you know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Really. I just thought they could have got something, and they decided you're just gonna sit in the press box, and then we're gonna let you go to Ottawa. So
Ottawa's gonna kick ass in a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he's gonna win the Hart Trophy in 2025. So whatever. We're okay.
Sky Point, Gaudette gang.
Yeah, it was fun for 3 weeks while it lasted. So,
Dave, we got to find a new player to like.
Yeah. Well, remember we did our preseason stuff? Didn't I say something about Kubalik having a below average year? So,
I like.
I said RIP Gaudette gang. Why are you targeting Team Cubes right now?
I don't want to do it. I want to say I got something right. Well, I'm not even happy about getting that right. Like, I don't know. Sorry, I'm upset about the disbanding of the Gaudette gang, because it doesn't travel to Ottawa.
We'll do a reunion show in like 10 years
Yeah, we'll have to find out whenever the Hawks play the Senators next, and we'll go to the game. We'll get our Gaudette jerseys that we don't have. We'll have to make them. We'll see when Ottawa comes to town. I don't know.
Didn't they come to town already? No.
Yeah, oh yes, fuck, they did. All right, next season.
Yeah, they played early.
The first, yeah, never mind.
Wasn't that their first win?
That was the first win.
Well, by next season, Gaudette won't be in Ottawa anymore.
God, our luck is terrible.
Yeah, we're bad at this. What? I don't know who's listening to this. I'm sorry.
The next time the Hawks play Ottawa is in March, so you.
Yeah, but it's in Ottawa. And
yeah, exactly. You just have
The Gaudette gang doesn't travel across borders.
I mean, we can. They might not let us in.
We do have one question I want to get to from the SCH commentariat, because I thought it was a very interesting question. It's from Drop the Puck, frequent commenter, a frequent part of the SCH community. Wanted to know, why is there so often a difference between viewpoints of a player's performance as seen through the eye test and as determined by analysis and statistics? Case in point was Seth Jones in the Sharks game, because they thought that Jones played well. The analytics say otherwise. Obviously limited by seeing what the camera's pointing at. What's the source for data upon which stats and analytics are derived? Clearly someone's looking at something other than what I'm able to watch. So I guess the first half of that question is the meat of it is, why is there so often a difference in viewpoints between the eye test and the analytics and statistics? And I think the short answer to that question is that it so often depends on whose eye test you are listening to. Because it's not always the case that eye test and analytics don't match up. That's not always true. I mean, go back to the Hawks in their heyday. They look like they kicked ass, and they kicked ass analytics in the analytics world. Like Marian Hossa is both. The eye test is good. The analytics are good. I think the issue comes up is just sometimes it's like an element of confirmation bias that you see what you want to see. You may miss things that you don't want to see. And it's very hard to train your eye to be objective, I think would be the answer to that. And you have to watch a lot of hockey and a lot of any sport to be able to pick up on some of the nuances. And this is where I wanted to throw this to Betsy, because you were talking about in our pre-show production meeting, you were talking about you've done some like reviews of tracking data. So there that your eye test might be different from the other three of ours because of the work you've done. So I want you to elaborate on that. So,
well, I was just saying that like my eye test matches analytics a lot. And I think maybe it is because I've peer reviewed stuff before.
You peer reviewed like the compiling of analytics data.
Yeah. When people were first starting to do it, and it wasn't like Corey or anybody like that, but it was, hey, we're starting to do this. Can you double check my work to make sure that I'm tracking correctly? That way you have more than one person doing something. And lots of people track now, by the way. I mean, even I wanted to say, like, the guy that runs the Shy Prospects Twitter, I think he's a really young, I think he's like a high school kid, actually. He did some tracking of some Ice Hogs games recently, and I was really impressed by wanting to do that. But anyway, it's just what you look for. I think it's like what you get into it for. And this isn't to say that people who aren't into analytics are going, hey, I know what I can tell that like the zone entries or that's going to be a high danger pass or that's going to be a forecheck with possession or whatever. It's not to say people who don't track that way don't have good eye tests. It's just a different way of watching the game to me. But I feel like most of the time my eye test matches in result stats, which are typically the shot stats, which are the high level one. But also part of the reason I like micro stats is because they can tell you the nuances of it. Like, why did so-and-so look good? Like Seth Jones is a good example because he generally looks pretty good when he's playing. But everybody watching can tell that his defensive foundation is not the best. Like he's got some issues, but he makes up for it with his athleticism. He gets back on plays. He's bigger, stronger, faster. It's part of the reason why he was pretty good at zone entry defense, is because he could knock people away or position them out of the way pretty well, even if his gap wasn't the best, you know? But he's really good offensively, so that makes up for it a lot. And like I said, if the Hawks had possession more, I don't think we would care that much that Seth's foundation defensively isn't the best. He'd have the puck so much, who cares? Yeah. Wouldn't matter. But either way, I don't think that the eye test and stats shouldn't match. I think it just, like you said, it depends on who's watching, but most of the time you really have to, like, I view them as complementary to each other and they give you a better picture. Sometimes I'll watch a game and then go to the stats and go, oh, okay, that's different than what I thought. And I'll accept that as truth. Or I'll try to look beyond, well, why did I see it differently? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Anybody, and I think if you talk to anybody that is open-minded about the analytics and the eye test debate, they will acknowledge that both have merit. As long as the eye test is good, and also, like, you have to trust that the people doing the analytics are good. If anybody tells you that analytics are the only thing that matters, they're probably wrong. And if there are people that tell you the eye test is the only thing that matters, they're probably wrong too. And I would encourage you, I talked about this with Jack, who's known on Twitter as JFresh Hockey. He's one of the big, you see his player cards all over the internet. We specifically talked about this because I've been very intrigued by this too. And he was one that, you know, talked about what he sees and what he sees and what the data tells him. But as to Betsy's point, like, if you watch, like, the ones that are tracking data, if you watch a game and you're just watching it to see if a player can dump in the puck and retrieve it themselves, or if a teammate retrieves it, if you watch that and only that while you're compiling this data, eventually you'll be watching a game and you'll see it and you'll acknowledge it in the back of your mind. And to the extent that someone who, if you're just watching the game, someone will dump the puck and retrieve it themselves, and you won't even notice that that was what happened. It's kind of like the phenomenon of if you have a Chevy Cruze, or if you buy a Chevy Cruze and you're driving on the highway, you will start seeing more Chevy Cruzes because you recognize them because you're driving one as well. It's a similar concept to that, I think.
Yes. And I was going to make one more point, because I try to bring it up a lot, because people are always like, well, stats and eye tests don't mix. Micro stat tracking or any type of tracking like that is very similar to a job that exists in hockey, which is video coaches. That is their main job, is to break down videos in that exact same way. The only thing micro stat people are doing is they're quantifying those events.
And when you say micro stats, that's stuff like zone
entries, passes, check, forecheck, puck retrieval, puck battles. If it happens on the ice, somebody is probably quantifying it somewhere. It depends on who you go to, like Sports Logic and a bunch of the like proprietary ones. They track like everything. Like, they have all the shit. Okay. Yeah. Like,
Sports Logic's data is only available to people who work for The Athletic, which kind of sucks, because if they had it available, I'd pay for it, because I would love some of that data.
I think, I'm pretty sure it's anybody who's a journalist, like, if you have a journalist, you can pay for it. I don't know if it's just The Athletic. I feel like Charlie from, like, he does, like, he quotes it sometimes too. But either way, it's an interesting thing, because that's where, if you like the eye test and you're a little questionable on stats, that's where they meet up the best to me. Because it's literally somebody watching a game and tracking what's happening.
Shay, I wanted to bring you in. Do you have any other thoughts to add to this whole thing?
Jones was relatively fine in the Sharks game to tackle the second half of that question. He was his metrics weren't great compared to his offensive zone start percentage, and that's something I pay attention to in terms of analytics, is like, how much offensive zone start percentage is this guy getting, like, and do like his possession stats measure up? And with the Blackhawks, very often they don't. But that's something I weigh heavily in my mind. So I'm not a big eye test person, because I'm not a person who, like, sometimes I watch hockey and I don't know what I'm looking at. I'm not an X's and O's person. So I don't It's very fast. It's a very fast game. And it's not like football or soccer where like, oh yeah, I understand completely where this is going. These guys are moving pretty slowly. Especially in like soccer where you like fully understand at all times what's going on. Yeah, so eye test, it's like, do they have the puck on their stick? Do they look comfortable with it? Do they look like they're going to be able to possess it? Or are they going to, do they look like they're going to lose it? And a lot of the times in that game, Jones looked like he was going to lose the puck. And he just was never able to secure it. And that's what I was watching, was like on the DeBrincat pass. And then I believe he was the one at the blue line with the empty netter. The inability to secure the puck in those moments is.
Well, I feel like the DeBrincat does a spinning blind into the middle of the ice. And like, I know maybe Jones can do a little better, but like.
Other defensemen could have secured that puck.
Well, Jones occasionally makes choices. So I'll go ahead and say that I haven't minded Jones at all this season, especially offensively. I thought he's been really good that way. And I haven't minded him that much defensively as the games have gone on. And he's had very few like shit games to me. And every, even number one defenseman, even Norris caliber defenseman will have shit games every once in a while. But I think it's okay for people to point out when his game isn't that great. He was fine. He wasn't great. He was fine. But on that play, he like tried to poke check it instead of playing the he played the puck instead of the body. That was his problem, and it took him out of the play.
Yeah. And my argument for that is always like Jones compounded the problem, but the problem doesn't exist if DeBrincat doesn't.
Yes, DeBrincat, and also honestly, Kane like just like looped around and didn't do anything at the top either, and he could have tried to stop it too, but he didn't. So it was like. All three of them did not great things, but you're right. The trigger problem was DeBrincat's pass.
Yeah. And Shay, did you have anything else on the eye test versus analytics thing before I wanted to bring Mill in?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, there's going to be people who listen to both, but like if you listen to eye test more than you listen to analytics, that's how you end up with paying Nikita Zadorov $4 million.
unless you've got a really, really, really good eye test. Like there's, I don't doubt that there are people out there and like that have compiled analytics data before, or just have watched an insane amount of hockey and just know it when they see it. And I'm sure it's some of the Blackhawks European scouts that we've extolled on this podcast several times. Some of them just have, some people just have an eye for it. They know what it's supposed to look like when it's good and they can identify it. And it is a hell of an ability to have. I certainly don't feel like I have it, which is why the more analytics data that comes out, I kind of lean on it a little bit more because you want them to line up and something. The analytics usually tell me my eye is still off. So I haven't watched enough hockey yet. So I guess I got to watch more, but I wanted to throw to Mill at the end because I know Mill has watched a lot of hockey, a lot of games at the United Center. So I was intrigued by your thought on this whole thing.
Yeah, I'm definitely like a both type of person from my own eye test, not from other people's. And that the reason for that is because what's nice about analytics is they're a quantitative statistic, whereas you can't really quantify somebody's eye test, if that makes sense. So
yeah, it's qualitative, not quantitative. We're busting out all the big words.
Well, it's just like you can't – like somebody says, well, this guy had a good game because of the eye test. It's like, well, what does that mean? And I think that you need to provide context. So like I would ask people who are very into eye test stuff to try to watch the game as if you're coaching. That's kind of what helps me. Mm-hmm. So like an example that comes to mind is I remember a couple years ago when they brought Campbell back and – Quenneville, if Crawford was starting, he would trust him to play on his off wing. And so when they're dropping back to play defense, and some coaches, if they were trying to, if the Hawks were trying to keep pucks to the outside, which is what they Q did, they would notice, okay, Campbell's on his off wing. If he turns the wrong way to try to, you know, make the play, we're going to get a cut between him and the you know, whoever's playing the middle, usually Taves out there, whatever. And they're going to get a lane to the net, things like that. So you can say, oh, this guy had a shitty game. It's like, well, look at the strategy. Look at him, you know, what the coach has him doing. And then look at the bad plays and see what the other coach had him doing. Hockey's the hardest sport to try to figure shit out.
And that, Mill, I think that is a pivotal thing of why the eye test is and I feel like this isn't necessarily the eye test. This is my issue with the people that say analytics is everything, because the analytics can tell you what is happening, but sometimes you need your eyes to tell you why it's happening. So maybe Brian Campbell's numbers were all shitty in the analytics world because he was playing on his off wing, which is something you may not necessarily know unless you were watching the game.
Sure. Yeah. That's just kind of my two cents. It's like the analytics give us really great context to, like, okay, these specific numbers, and I like them a lot, for especially when I'm trying to research players or write articles or whatever. But I think it doesn't always help you learn how to watch the game.
Yeah.
It'll help you look for stuff. Like, they do help. But I think, like, they're not going to always tell you, like, certain guys' habits, like with the stick, or like how they skate in certain ways in certain situations. And that's more of a coachy thing. And I'm very surface level. Like, I like this stuff because I'm interested in it, but I don't know shit compared to, like, you know, people who actually coach and know what they're doing. But that's just my two cents. Is like, maybe have your analytics, you know, pull up like Natural Stat Trick's, a great site to use while you're watching the games for team stats and stuff, and kind of like rewatch plays slow-mo and just try to watch it as if you're making adjustments. So yeah, just to wrap things up on that point, there's a lot that goes into it, but I also just want to say I'm not slandering Brian Campbell. He actually played pretty good that year. A lot of the problem was that he was paired with TVR a lot.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for clarifying, because I don't want any Brian Campbell stuff.
No, we do like 51 fandom here on this podcast.
I love Brian Campbell so much. Yeah, man, that was fun. All right. Well, like this, we talked about a lot of hockey tonight. So let's put a bow on all the hockey discussion and let's get back to again, we are the internet's best hockey themed food podcast. So we have to, all three people that are listening to this that want to get our food take, we need to deliver. So Shay, you are on food take responsibility. The floor is all yours.
Look, I respect the cookie. So this is not about that.
That's a great start. I respect the cookie.
Thanksgiving, this is undebatable. Thanksgiving is a better food holiday than Christmas, hands down. Like, it's inarguable. Like, Christmas has nothing compared to Thanksgiving in terms of food. Like, what are you going to do? A ham? Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Like, what are you doing? Like, my father makes lamb, which is not, like, probably not a very traditional Christmas dinner.
No, we do that too.
That's just because I love Julia Child's lamb recipe. But like, but most houses, like the traditional, like, American family Thanksgiving, or not Thanksgiving, Christmas, when I think of it, is like ham and maybe like yams. Oh, that's nothing.
Well, I made the yams for Thanksgiving this year, so don't you start slandering yams, because
let's take the yams off, because it cancels out. Because they're on both. It's on both. So a ham versus a turkey and like stuffing and everything else that's on a Thanksgiving table, it doesn't compare.
I think I disagree with you there, because like turkey's tradition, you have to have turkey on Thanksgiving. There's no tradition. There's no integrity. You don't fuck with tradition. Every other Letterkenny quote I can think of. But like, a turkey has a pretty low turkey. Tops out as like a third line winger. Like it's
I disagree. I think turkey can be a franchise player if you make it right. Yes.
Honey baked ham, or like a glazed ham.
No.
Oh, blows turkey out of the water.
No.
Come on.
Like, it's too sweet to, like, after a little while of eating it, it's too sweet. Thanksgiving, turkey never has that problem with Thanksgiving. You never like are like, this is, I can't eat any more of this. It's like, yeah, keep going. Like, especially because gravy exists, and a gravy on a sugar baked ham. Ugh.
You put gravy on mashed potatoes. You can have hashed potatoes at your Christmas dinner as your Thanksgiving one.
But you can also have gravy on turkey, and that makes turkey insanely better. Gravy is arguably the best line mate in the world. Gravy is Chris Kunitz.
No, the turkey is Chris Kunitz. The gravy is Sidney Crosby, because the gravy is better.
Sure. That's better.
True, but turkey can play with Sidney Crosby. And ham is Phil Kessel, because ham can't play with Sidney Crosby.
Ham
is like Malkin. He can play by himself.
I wouldn't say ham is Malkin, though. But especially if turkey is just.
We need to stop calling.
Why don't we become a Penguins podcast? What the fuck?
Yeah, and I'm not
it's,
even.
It's because Shea had to find a player that wasn't actually very good to be the turkey, and the only one he could
I said let me say this. I said best line mate in the world for turkey for gravy, but it was elevated. It's elevated by the play of gravy. Yes, but that's because. Ooh. But also, again, Ham isn't elevated. Ham is made worse.
Turkey is like
by the best player.
Let's bring it back to the Blackhawks. Turkey is like Han Zeus, and the gravy is like Kane.
Okay.
Normally, Han Zeus would be a fourth line player. So Turkey's a fourth line player.
But Ham is then Brad Richards.
But Han Zeus wasn't a fourth line player in his day.
Yeah. Well,
getting back to this, Turkey is better than Ham. Turkey, like, again, Ham is garbage at a certain point. It becomes garbage.
Turkey, I don't need either, garbage. So I don't really have a horse in this race.
If you can dry out a turkey, and turkey can be pretty awful too. Like, if you cook
at the peak of making, turkey is better than ham. At their peaks.
Hard disagree. Thanksgiving's better than Christmas, just like as an overall holiday, because like Christmas is the end of everything, Thanksgiving is the start. But I'm not even gonna argue that Christmas is the better meal, but like the fact that Christmas, you're telling me Thanksgiving blows Christmas out of the water. And I'm
thinking, yes, it does.
Stuffing.
That's where it comes down to. Stuffing and pumpkin pie. And that's it.
Thanksgiving.
You can have pumpkin pie at Christmas.
No, you can't. Who's having pumpkin pie at Christmas?
We do.
But you're in the South. You're in the South. Who in the North is having pumpkin pie at Christmas?
I'm not, but I feel like apple pie comes out at Christmas, and good warm apple pie.
You can have pecan at both.
You just quote American Pie?
And it's the best.
Maybe.
I just want to say, I think the dining and overall holiday experience is different, and it shifts our perspective of the meal, because Thanksgiving kind of rocks because you don't really do anything. You eat whenever and you watch football or whatever. Christmas is kind of like, for me, it's more like hectic and there's a lot going on.
True.
And there's like basketball, which is not as fun as watching football to me for some reason on a holiday.
Yeah, but you could watch holiday movies instead. I don't watch sports on these
days.
But
I can't make money on holiday movies.
Yeah.
I hit all three games on the Hallmark movie.
They're going to end up together.
Yeah, what are you going to bet with your uncle whether or not this is the edited version of Home Alone 2?
Dude, I straight up like... I've never seen one of those, but I heard my mom and my grandma both talking about how they're like, oh, we were watching it and we got sucked in, and then we didn't realize it was like 5 hours long or whatever. I'm just like, that doesn't sound like my jam. Are they emotional?
The Home Alone movies? No.
Hallmark.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are.
Yeah, see, I can't do that. I'm like...
If you like trash stuff, and I unashamedly do like trash TV, so I like Hallmark movies. Give me another Christmas Prince movie, and
I'm more trash in the music department.
Yeah, I have some recommendations for streaming movies if you want to watch non-trash. Happiest Season is always fantastic.
I enjoy non-trash TV too. I'm just saying I am apparently not too discerning when it comes to watching certain things. We all know I love The Masked Singer. So,
is that trash?
I would consider it a form of trash TV.
I've never seen it. I've seen ads for it.
Actually got really good production value for that show. The dancers are incredible. Sometimes it's very weird. But anyway, that's a different topic.
I don't know.
Speaking of trash, let's get back to Shay's food take about Christmas.
Hey.
I'll just say that you can have lots of families have turkey at Christmas and Thanksgiving and stuffing too. If you Google traditional Christmas thing, I think Wikipedia literally says it's turkey and stuffing and stuff, so it's kind of the same to me. We in the South where I am, we have ham at both. The only difference is we don't have turkey at Christmas, but we have Cornish hens instead. This year we're doing something different, but I don't remember what my mom said it was gonna be, but just a different type of bird.
I just can't get over the idea that
penguin.
There's been way too much penguin discussion already. So we're certainly not gonna start eating them. But I cannot wrap my head around a slandering of Christmas food. Just, man, what is going on?
In comparison to Thanksgiving, it is
I think that you're allowed to have way more, like I know you started with, you know, the thing about the cookies, but there are way more cookies.
And I feel like the cookies are so central to the Christmas dinner that you can't just, if like you
this is why I had to pay respects to the cookies. This is why I had to pay respects to cookies, because cookies are like more central in the in the holidays, but they're also not, I don't think you would put them on your Christmas dinner table.
Where else are you going to put it? On the dessert table? Come on.
It's the dessert, but you're going to eat them all the time. You're just going to have like a tin of cookies.
Yeah. You're going to have a tin of cookies and then you're going to open them up on Valentine's Day and they're all going to be rock solid and then you throw them away.
I just want to put out there, because I don't eat it, but I don't eat any of this stuff, so it's hard for me to think about it. But, now that I'm thinking about it, I think we have ham, turkey, roasted pig, and lamb on Christmas.
Wisconsin dream right there.
Well, my family celebrates Christmas on January 7th because that's the Serbian Orthodox day. Okay. So there's been many years where like my friends will start showing up to eat. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. Like, we're having Christmas, but it's fine. Yeah. But they go all out. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous and probably really unhealthy.
Well, that's the point. And then you go, it's different with the Orthodox Christmas because you're already into the new year, but that's why everyone makes the New Year's resolution of getting in shape because of everything you did to yourself at Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and COVID, like where I gained fucking 100 pounds.
You drink to that.
That's why I gained so much weight.
Yeah. All right. Well,
also the gym was closed for like 3 months. So
more than that, I
am still of the opinion gym should have been the last thing you're open.
I agree with that, but I just mean, generally speaking, they were closed.
Hey, and I know the area where you live, Mill. Just get a bike. There's a bunch of trails. Just start exploring.
I mean, I pay like $20 a month for the gym.
Well, cancel that. Take that money. Buy a bike.
Dude, I'm Chandler Binging the gym right now, or I'm just like not canceling it and not going. And then I show up and then they get more of my money.
Well,
I like that you use Chandler Bing as a...
Do you know what I'm talking about? Where
yes, 100%. Like, it's that episode where they can't cancel and the hot girl being there.
Then Ross is like, I got one too. And then we got a joint checking account.
It's a good episode.
All right. Well,
I'm done.
Now that friends have come up, I have to end the episode. So, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thank you for listening to all this insanity. I guess this is what happens when we take a week off. We have to get more insanity out of our system and onto these airwaves. So again, thank you for listening. Stay tuned to secondcityhockey.com. We'll be previewing and recapping and game thread and doing all that good stuff. That's just had a huge, what'd you say, Mel?
Complaining.
Oh, there will be complaining. Betsy had a huge prospect update that dropped on Monday. Shay covered the Hawks game from Sunday night. So there's plenty of content there. And we'll keep writing whatever they play. A lot of games. We're going to have a lot of stuff to write about. So, stay tuned to the website for all that. I'm on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM. Mill is at Mill182. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. And Betsy's not on Twitter, but she's at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. Rate, review, subscribe, do all that stuff for the podcast. We'd much appreciate it wherever it is you get your podcast. I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks to Mill, Shay, and Betsy for hanging out. Thanks to you for listening. And we'll talk to you next week, I guess. Yeah, let's do that.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you,
Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.